Hey, this is John Chris from Saturday Down South. Welcome to the SDS Podcast. Our guest for this episode, Tom Hart, who is the newly announced play-by-play man for Saturday Night Football on SEC Network. He's got Jordan Rodgers and the Boot doing color and Cole Kubelik on the sideline. We talked to him about his new team and the type of information he gets from head coaches before it actually goes on the air. Take a listen. All right, Tom, you were the new play-by-play voice of Saturday Night Football on the SEC Network. It's a very high-profile position. Jordan Rodgers doing the color, and you've got Cole Kubelik on the sideline. I'm interested to know, like, how these teams come together. I mean, how much of the process is it deciding who's going to be in what spot? Two guys who work together, maybe two guys who don't necessarily work together. Before you get to an announcement such as this, how does all that teamwork work?
I wish I knew, John. I mean, they don't tell us, right? I mean, I get a phone call one day saying, hey, here's your new package and here's who you're working with, which is kind of the reality, but I mean, a lot more science and studying goes into it. I think what they're looking for are people who complement each other, you know, to make sure that you don't have three of the same people in any given booth. Mm-hmm. And that's what has me excited about this crew. I think I worked with Cole last year, and he sees the game and studies the game unlike anyone I've ever met before. I mean, he's 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. And Jordan brings, you know, a personality and a pizzazz and a popularity to the position. And he played quarterback in the SEC. And that's invaluable for a guy who knows exactly what he's looking at and can see the whole field. That's why quarterbacks, the best analysts are always quarterbacks mm-hmm. in the booth.
But what is it about a primetime broadcast versus a 12 o'clock kickoff, a 3:30 kickoff? There's something about under the lights, especially in the Southeast, where frankly, there's not as much to do on Saturday nights, and this is what everybody is focusing on.
There's two ways to answer that question. Number one, and just to pull the curtain back a little bit, like when you're calling a noon game or a 3:30 or 4 o'clock game on any given Saturday, you really have a hard time in that day following the rest of college football, mm-hmm. even within the league. Because if you're doing a noon game, you're on, and then you're racing to the airport to get home, or you're jumping in the car and you're listening on the radio and trying to catch up when you get home. If you're doing a mid-afternoon game, you're watching half of the first game, and then you miss out on all the night games. So what you have is, and we know how much the landscape shifts during any given Saturday, that you have an opportunity to watch the entire day of college football, whether it's within just the SEC or on a national scale, then process it, digest it, and bring it to the viewers at night as it relates to the game that you're doing. The other part of it that you hit on is what makes the SEC so special is the fact that, you know, the passion and pride on every campus or on any given campus is different than you'll find anywhere. And when you give SEC fans 12 hours to marinate and to get excited and to get ready for that night game and then the lights come on, and just a whole nother level of energy and enthusiasm. And the passion is always there. Mm-hmm. Even you have an 11 a.m. kickoff in Lexington, Kentucky, there's still passion. But all of a sudden you flip that to a 7:30 kickoff under the lights, and it just, to borrow a phrase from the commissioner, which sounds trite, it's been overplayed over the last 364 days.
It just
days,
means more.
Doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Or at least it seems like it does, and that's the perception.
At least according to those belt commercials, absolutely. So Jordan Rodgers is going to be your partner in crime. This is a guy who a year or two ago is still trying to play.
Yeah.
Pretty meteoric rise for this guy. Some of them are just naturals. Some of them don't realize how much work is actually involved in a job like that. But talk about this partnership with Jordan and what you see from him so far.
Well, I know he wants to be successful. He's a very driven individual. I mean, you don't go from a junior college quarterback in Nowhereville, Northern California, to starting in the SEC if you don't have drive and passion. And certainly he has talent, and he's got that it factor that bosses love and that certainly the television cameras love. But that drive, that personality, the passion that he has, I think it's really going to come across in the screen. It's going to come across during the broadcast. And what I know about him is that he takes great pride in being prepared. You know, he puts a lot of work into getting ready for the game, to know in the league, to know in the players. We've only worked together one time, and that was on a one-off show in the spring. We went to Missouri to do a spring preview. And to be perfectly honest, I don't know what my expectations were because I'd met him one other time, I think. And I was immediately impressed by the way he presented himself, the passion that he had for it, and the work that he had already put into it. And it's a spring show about Missouri football. It's not exactly one that's going to be under the lights and watched by millions of people. So
right.
That's going to be exaggerated, I know, once we get to the season.
Now, you've done this in a lot of different capacities in a lot of different places, but I know you've had situations where you've had a color guy where it's not necessarily a personality thing or you don't get along, but the chemistry isn't quite there.
Yeah.
You notice it, your color guy notices it. How often do you think the viewers actually notice that?
I think they can tell right away.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go into any restaurant or bar and you sit down or you're invited with friends and you're having a night out, you want to be with people that are getting along. It's just that simple. If you and your wife go on a double date with one couple and they don't get along, you guys aren't asking them out to dinner again, right? Thanks, but we're moving on to the next group. I've been lucky, and I think that's part of my job, is my job is to not only create that chemistry, but to nurture it. And mm-hmm. part of that is finding out what makes that person good or what makes them great. And I've told my partners this before, and I told Jordan, my job is to make you have a great season. Because if you have a great year, then we've had a great year. Mm-hmm. And the secret there is to finding out what their strengths are and to play to their strengths. You know, nobody tunes in to hear the play-by-play guy or to pay attention to who's calling the game. They want to know what the analysts think of their team and how it relates and give us perspective as to how our team stacks up with the rest of the league or nationally. And that's what both Cole and Jordan can do.
Are you prepared for all the questions and comments and Twitterverse with regard to The Bachelorette? And that's how a lot of people are going to know the guy next to you.
Yeah, I'm not ready for it. I'm not ready for it just yet. We got at a...
There is actual preparation for that.
No, there's nothing I can do. We got out of the car last night after dinner, and we're walking into the hotel, and Jordan turns to me and he said, hey, what brand of underwear do you wear? That's not a typical question, and where is this going? No. He goes, oh, well, let me back up. He goes, I actually have an interview with the Hollywood Reporter tonight. So that, you know, that's one of the things that might come up. But I don't have interviews with Hollywood Reporter. I don't have interviews with People Magazine. This guy does. I also don't have the hair, so that it helps explain why those don't happen for me.
But you do wear underwear, so now you have to answer the question. Yes. What brand do you wear? I'm a Tommy John guy myself.
Yeah, I went Psycho Bunny. I don't even know if it's...
Heard good things.
Yeah, good things, and I just wanted to be enough off the reservation to get people curious.
So sideline reporters, a lot of the times we assume, you know, it's going to be a girl like a Laura Rutledge that I believe you've worked with before,
yeah.
But you got Cole Kubelik, and again, he's a hardcore X's and O's guy, an ex-offensive lineman. He brings a different element to that job, and I think a lot of football viewers anticipate in the 21st century.
Well, I think viewers, especially with the SEC, they have a passion for the game. They want to learn. And they either want to know the analyst's perspective about their team in the league, or they want to be taught something. And I learn something every time I watch a game with Cole. Mm-hmm. I wish we could have cameras in our production meetings and in our film room, because when you sit down and you watch film with them and you can break down what's going on in the offensive line and the pits and what's happening in the A gap and what are they doing in the B gap, I've learned more football from Cole over the last season than I ever knew. So I think if you can translate that to the viewers, either tell them what's happening or teach them why it's happening, they have a real appreciation for that. Because SEC fans have a respect for the game. They know what's going on with their team. They want to learn more. They have a passion and a hunger to learn more. And it might just be so they can talk trash Monday at the office, or it might be so they can commiserate after a loss, or how are we going to fix this? And guys like Cole can point it out, and they can tell you what's going wrong and what's going right.
It seems like a perfect match where you got a quarterback in the booth and a big ugly downstairs. There's a nice dichotomy. There's a nice contrast between the two voices, and it's not necessarily the same thing being regurgitated from sideline to booth and back and forth.
Yeah, there's a great conversation that occurs, and it also occurs when we're in commercial break, and it was like this with our crew last year with Andre on the sideline, with Andre Ware in the booth and Cole down on the sideline, where Cole has a set of eyes on the field that he can predict and explain and show things that are going on that maybe we can't see. And then it turns into a three-man conversation about the game itself. And I think that helps us then to explain the game, or not even explain, but present the game to the audience. It's really fascinating to, and go, you know, football nerd alert here, but we get into conversation last night about if you're operating out of the shotgun, how do you like the ball delivered? Because there's been a new style developed really over the last couple seasons where the center, instead of snapping it back in a spiral fashion,
right,
will just grab the cone and flutter it back like
right,
a knuckleball. So we got into that a little bit last year when doing a Vanderbilt game. And it came up at dinner last night. And Jordan's eyes lit up and he said, man, I love it. Like, that's how I want the ball. Float it back to me like a knuckleball. And I realized as we're having this conversation over red meat and red wine, like, this is the kind of conversation that I think viewers would appreciate. Like, they want to know what's the right way. They want to know how a quarterback likes it, the benefits, the pros and cons about receiving a snap. And it sounds so simple and something that happens 150 times during the course of a game, but could also turn a game. And then that little nuance can have an effect on whether a quarterback gets a snap right and whether he gets the pass off in time and whether that offense can have success.
It sounds like that you're saying that particular piece of information, things along those lines, are better suited for a Saturday night primetime SEC audience versus, you know, a noon kick in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I really do. Not to say that Pac-12 fans don't have that appreciation,
of course.
But you got to look at it bigger picture. And then the you know, from a play-by-play perspective, the challenge is how too far inside football do you go? Mm-hmm. You know, when do you pull back? And Cole's great about explaining stuff to me so I can put that in perspective. And, you know, I can say, hey, listen, the A-gap is a spot between the guard and the center. Mm-hmm. And some people know that and some people don't. So it's up to me to kind of translate some of that stuff at times. And, you know, it's up to me to recognize when we're getting too deep. But I think SEC fans as a whole have so much invested that they're smart. You know, I hate it. My pet peeve when I'm watching a game or reading an article is when people talk down to fans. They have more information in this day and age than they've ever had access to. Mm-hmm. They know what's going on. So help them appreciate the game and give them some perspective.
So from a play-by-play perspective, you've done a lot of football, but you've also done a lot of baseball as well. There are different games, there are different sports, there's different styles to the broadcast. What are some of the similarities? What are some of the differences from one game to the other with the job that you have?
Well, my passion is finding stories, you know, finding stories about players, finding stories about coaches, finding stories about programs. And I'm kind of a nerd in this regard. I especially like the historical angle. You know, it might be a game that was 10 years ago, it might be a game that was 50 years ago, but it was played on the same day or between the same two teams and it's relevant. I think fans like seeing that. They like that, those historical flashbacks. Maybe they were at that game or maybe that was their favorite player. You know, LSU, you can't show Billy Cannon's punt return enough.
Right.
They're going to appreciate that every time. And so I appreciate that. But I think from a storytelling perspective, those are similarities. You want to get those stories out. But the biggest difference is in baseball, you've got 3.5 hours and plenty of time between pitches, pitching changes, and downtime. You have plenty of time to tell those stories and explain them and flush them out. In football, you might have 15 seconds between a play. So if you're going to talk about the linebacker whose mother's battling cancer, you got to get it in, make it relevant, get out, and get on to the next play. And then you hope that that guy makes another play so you can build on the story and continue telling it.
So as from a story perspective, one thing we talk about in the SEC a lot is some of the historical greats. You mentioned Billy Cannon, of course. But for some reason, especially in football, because the players get bigger and stronger and faster every year, we sort of assume that today's players, you know, they were better than the guys in the 80s.
Yeah.
They were better than the guys in the 60s. But there's a couple of names that SEC fans just claim can never be topped. And it's guys like Herschel Walker, and it's guys like Bo Jackson. And it didn't seem to matter what Derrick Henry did, and it didn't seem to matter what Leonard Fournette did. You're always being compared to those guys, and you can never get past those guys. What is it about those guys? Was it just the things they did? Was it when they played? Was it how these games were viewed and the access that fans had to them at the time?
I think the access is a big thing. You know, there was one or two games on television back then. Now every game
is on television. So much of it is legend, really.
Absolutely. And those guys, you know, like your Herschel Walker who didn't really leave and was celebrated and had so much passion. All of a sudden, you know, everything about SEC football is generational, right? So you're taught as a Georgia fan, you're taught the history of the program, you're taught to appreciate it. You're taught about sugar raining down from the sky in the Sugar Bowl. Like that's just part of it that's ingrained in you. And that's what makes it so special, because now you have young kids in this day and age, they're gonna feel the same way about Darius Geis. Maybe not on a national scale unless he wins the Heisman, which I think he has a great chance
to do. Has a chance.
But, you know, because those stars were so singular to the sport from a national perspective, you might lose a little bit, but I think it's still appreciated. And I think it's appreciated by program. You know, every program has their star. You mentioned Chase Daniel to a Missouri fan, and all of a sudden memories of beating Kansas and being the number one team in the country 10
right.
years ago are going to flood their mind, and their sons are going to be wearing his jersey, even though he hasn't appeared in a Missouri jersey in a decade. And so it just kind of builds upon itself.
So from a broadcaster's perspective, you're on the road a lot.
Yeah.
You visit a lot of places. Doing your job on the assignment, what's a place you really love to go to? From the atmosphere, from the food and the drink, just a place that, okay, you know you're going there for the weekend, you're really looking forward to this trip in particular.
So this is an answer that can get me in trouble with a lot of people.
Of course.
And so I've got a lot of, a lot of different answers, right? Depending on what parameters we're going to set up. I grew up in Columbia, Missouri. I grew up a mile and a half from Fro Field. And if I wasn't at the game, I could hear the roar of the crowd as I was raking leaves or stacking wood or whatever I was doing on that Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. So there will always be a special place in my heart for my hometown. Within the SEC and college football as a whole, if you haven't been, there's nothing like Oxford, Mississippi. I mean, there was from the entire experience. I mean, they've got two Beard Award-winning chefs on the square, you know, within like three blocks of each other. You can't get a bad meal in Oxford. And when the football is good, everything's great. The line had always been that they'd never lost a party, and that's good, until they got really good at football once again for the first time since the 60s. And now all of a sudden, that was elevated. Second to that, I appreciate historical stadiums. I appreciate passionate fan bases. And I love going into Neyland Stadium. I don't think there's anything like it on a college football Saturday. I have a chance to, you know, cover this sport in a lot of different conferences. And I put Neyland Stadium right next to the horseshoe in terms of stadiums that I really appreciate, because you can appreciate the history because you can still see the history. You know, there are modern amenities now when it comes to skyboxes, but as you approach the stadium and you walk around the bowels of it, you can see it, which is probably why places like Wrigley and Fenway are two of my favorite major league ballparks, because you can feel it when you walk into those places.
But when you're in town on an assignment, you're calling a game on a Saturday night, you're not in town for that long, and certainly you're not there. I mean, you're on a job. So how much do you truly get to enjoy these types of things? To go to the nice restaurants, to have a nice cocktail, to meet some people, to go to the student union. Do you ever get the opportunity to truly enjoy the things like you wish you could?
I find a way.
Very good answer.
Yeah, no, I find a way. That's actually one of the things we've discussed recently, is it's different when you have a noon game or an 11 a.m. start.
Right.
You know, you might go grab dinner and you're at the stadium at 9 a.m. and you turn around and you're hoofing it out of town afterwards. That's a real benefit to doing a game in prime time. You get all day to rest up, to watch football, and you can appreciate everything Friday night. We also usually get there on Thursday to go watch practice and spend some time around the teams. So that's a little bit more relaxed. You know, the towns generally haven't really fired up on Thursday like they're going to get fired up on Friday. So I find a way, and I'm lucky to cover this league and basketball and baseball. So if I miss out on a fall trip, I'm probably going to be back there for basketball, or I'm probably going to be back there for baseball.
Here's something that someone like me finds very interesting. I cut my teeth as a beat writer. I used to cover the Chicago Bears. I used to cover Florida State. So I'm used to the access that we're getting for practice, which is very limited, of course.
Right.
But you guys come in later in the week, and you get to see some things behind the curtain that we don't necessarily. How do those conversations work with ADs and with coaches? Because sometimes you're getting to see little snippets of game plan or ideas what you might actually see on Saturday, but it needs to be somewhat privileged information. So how do those conversations go before you get on the air?
That's a fascinating question. I think it's what it boils down to is relationships. And you know and you understand, no matter what the sport is, that the difference between on the record and off the record. And you learn what can be shared and what can't be shared. And that's very important to developing that trust. And you have to find a way to tell a story or let the listener or viewer infer from a story what's happening if they are able to read between the lines. And I think that's a real talent to do so. There's nothing more fun than sitting in a meeting with a coach and having them let their guard down. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it happens when you talk X's and O's and you get a guy at the dry erase board and he really gets into it and starts going. And sometimes it happens when you're just shooting the bull about something else and then they get into what's really happening. On the flip side, it can be very frustrating when you know what's happening and you ask a guy a direct question and he refuses to be honest with you or transparent. It puts you in a really, really tough spot.
Right.
And obviously that occurs too. But going back to your original point and kind of what I said when we first sat down, is fans in this day and age have access to so much information. They know exactly what's going on with the team. what they don't have is access. And so that's what I appreciate about what I do, whether it's Friday afternoon sitting down with Nick Saban, getting on the field Saturday before a game and talking to a coordinator or saying hi to a coach and, hey, you know, what's the deal injury-wise? You guys good here? Did you see the game that happened earlier today? Mm-hmm. Most people just can't do that. Certainly fans can't do that. And that's what I really appreciate about my role and where I am.
So give me a coach in the SEC who is an open book, carte blanche, whatever you want, and then give me a coach who's, let's just say, he's not necessarily that way and he's still pretty buttoned up.
Well, surprisingly, Lane Kiffin was wide open with everything.
That's not a surprise.
It was fantastic because he would start talking and then he'd stop and he'd go, ooh, yeah, don't repeat that one. I shouldn't have said that. But it was just talking football. You know, mm-hmm. It was just how'd you get to this point with the development of this offense? And he was brutally honest about his shortcomings. And I really appreciated spending time with him in that regard. Now, within that same meeting, in that same room, 30 minutes later, Nick Saban isn't exactly willing to share the secrets to his success.
This is my not surprised face.
Yeah, right? Shock. But as I learned with all the great coaches, and I think Mike Krzyzewski first taught me this in developing a relationship on that side and the basketball side, is if you go in prepared and if you go in asking smart questions and you've done your homework, then you're going to get great answers. And sometimes, I'll give you a good example. We went in, I did A&M's bowl game a couple years ago after their top two quarterbacks had just left the program. And I asked Kevin Sumlin some very direct questions in our meeting about what was promised in terms of playing time. I was under the impression that at least one of those two quarterbacks had been promised specific playing time, and he left because he didn't get it. And the family was upset that he didn't get it. Well, Sumlin's answer was, absolutely not. We don't promise anyone playing time in this program. We never have, and we never will. Okay, well, whether you believe that answer or not, that's an answer.
Right.
And that's an answer that we were able to take to the air that night as we discussed what turned into an absolute dumpster fire at that course of that point in the season and going into their bowl game. He took that tack. That was his answer. He's on the record with that, and that's fine too. Even if I thought there was more to that, that's an answer that we're able to pass on to the viewers.
So how do you do it when you're talking to a coach and you're getting this kind of access, you're preparing for a broadcast, and you know he's selling you a bill of goods? What do you do?
Well, there's not much you can do. You ask direct questions, and they understand that when you ask a direct question, if you don't feel like they're being transparent, that you're going to use that answer. And there are times where you simply phrase it over the course of the game by saying, we asked coach about X, he said Y. take it for what it's worth, but right. That was the answer he gave.
Okay.
And usually, typically, that gets exposed after some time. You know, not that they're lying or misleading, but if they're not being transparent, then down the road, the real answer will come out. You just want to make sure that you've been honest with your audience.
So let's spin into why we're here in Hoover for Media Days. Is there any reason to think about it any deeper than we need to, or is it still Alabama and everybody else in the West?
Yeah, Alabama and everybody else. I really, maybe it's recency bias. You know, I saw LSU during the spring. I had their spring game, kind of man-crushing on Darius Geis right now. I love what they're going to do offensively, how they're going to be less predictable than they have in the past. So with a career performance and a great game from everybody else, LSU could beat them on that given day. If Auburn gets a production out of the quarterback position like they expect, but we've been promised that bill of goods before, they can beat them on that given day. But Nick Saban has been an underdog at Alabama over the last 10 years, a total of four times.
Preposterous.
That's, what, 150 games roughly, and an underdog four times, including once ever at home, and that was his first season. It must have been, I don't know this for a fact, must have been the Iron Bowl his first
Probably.
Year. It is preposterous. It shows you the level of excellence that they've achieved. And so why doubt it? You know, you'd look silly doubting it.
The SEC's lesser division, as we have to call it, the East. Georgia seems like it's going to be the pick. Are you on board with that one, or is there somebody else that you think is going to find a way to Atlanta?
I wouldn't put Georgia's flag at the top right now, only because I think that is so unpredictable. And I think that division is going to be unpredictable every given Saturday. And Missouri's got a 3,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard receiver, and a 1,000-yard rusher coming back. We know they can score points. Kentucky's got a great running game. South Carolina's got a great young quarterback. Florida's been Florida. Everybody's getting better. maybe with the exception of Tennessee, and still Tennessee was good enough to be in position last year. So I wouldn't do that only because I think everybody's so evenly balanced on that side.
So give me one team that's here at Media Days that you're higher on than most people, and give me one team that you're not quite buying what other people are trying to sell you.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I haven't paid much attention to what other people are saying about teams. I mean, I know how I feel about them. I think, you know, I'm definitely high on LSU. I'm really questionable about Tennessee. I don't think that's going out on a limb. I think everybody understands and sees what's going on there. I think people are really high on Kentucky right now, and that's fantastic. I think they earned it. I think, you know, they're probably going to be picked ahead of Tennessee in the preseason poll. They've earned that. But I want to see if they can replicate the quarterback play that they got last year. I think it was a small sample size. I think they caught some people by surprise. And as good as the running game is, if they can't replicate those big play numbers, especially big plays and chunk plays from quarterback, they're going to have a hard time finding that same success.
Tom, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for your time and congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. If you liked what you heard, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe. You can also give us a rating. And for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.